Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains, now at Menards. Stain in one coat with Ultra Advanced Semi-Transparent Stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
This is A Million Other Choices, and I am your host, Kim. I have made it back for another week on time, still with a broken microphone, but we're going to get by. It's very kind of strange recording just before an episode gets posted. Like, I can see why some other podcasters start by talking about current events, like how Robert Picton just got stabbed in the head by a broken broom handle by another inmate. But I still promise I'm not going to do that. This isn't the Kim Show. Well, it is, but it's not about me. Today's episode discusses sexual activity in a graphic and descriptive nature and lots of the use of the word sexual assault, which I do not abbreviate or acronym out of respect for other victims, as I believe if you abbreviate and censor the words, it mitigates their impact and the victim's experience. Although you'll notice I do sometimes do abbreviate on Instagram and YouTube, but those platforms are very sensitive to words, which is actually too bad. But podcasts, you can talk about whatever you want. As a result of that, today's episode might not be for all of you. This is the murder of Leona Jasmine. Leona Mavis Jasmine was born on September 22, 1953 in Lethbridge, Alberta, along with her brother Grant and sister Laverne to parents Leslie and June. The family later moved around a bit. She went to elementary school in McGrath, which is about 32 kilometers south of Lethbridge, and then attended high school in Lumbrick, which is a hamlet just a bit east of the Crow's Nest Pass and west of Pincher Creek. Leslie and June had purchased a ranch there in 1968, and it's actually where June lived and continued to farm until 2010. Leslie passed away in 1997. In 1971, she married Edwin Johnson, and together they had two boys, Darcy and Sean. I could not find much background information on Leona, but she was described by a neighbor, Anne, who she befriended in Calgary, as a very, very pretty girl. She was very trusting, who always tried to see the best in people. And the timeline is a little bit muddy. According to her obituary, which is pretty brief and really only mentions her love of fishing, skiing, and camping, she had moved to Calgary in 1978 when her boys were fairly young. There is no mention of if the move to Calgary was due to a divorce from Edwin or if the family moved together and then they later divorced. Piecing things together like that at this point is very difficult, and I don't want to get it wrong out of respect for the family. All I do know is that by the late winter of 1990, she was living in Calgary in a small apartment in Central Park Plaza on 2nd Street and 12th Avenue in the Beltline area. At the time, the building, which was built in 1981, was a mix of commercial and residential suites with a number of bachelor pad style apartments, so it catered to single men and women. It is now a strictly commercial building, and the residents have moved over to the One Park Central, which is a newer and swankier building, although with rents in the $2,000 range for 500 square feet, probably drove the residents living there in the 1990s to go elsewhere. But at the time, Leona was 36, she was living alone, and the boys were young teenagers. Darcy, who I believe was the oldest, was 16, and they were living in Pincher Creek. Central Park Plaza was considered a high-rise apartment, but I think it was only actually about 14 floors, close to everything like transit. And Leona was on the 7th floor in apartment 717. Leona was dating a man named Alan Cannon. Now, how long they had been together, I'm not sure, but a while. Long enough that he had a key to her apartment and saw her pretty frequently. And one of the things that Leona did to earn some extra money was sell nail polish. I only really know about the nail polish, but it might have been like Avon or something involving a variety of cosmetics. But she kept a box of nail polishes in her apartment. Leona didn't have a lot of money. Like, her apartment was furnished, but nothing of any real value other than like a TV. There were no wads of cash laying around, no jewelry, nothing like that. And on the night of Thursday, February 8th, 1990, Alan had been over at her apartment, and he left about 6:20 and planned to return later that evening. Around 1 a.m., Alan did return to the apartment and he let himself in. And as soon as he turned the light on, his world was completely turned upside down. Leona was laying on the floor in front of the couch, and her torso was slumped over the sofa. She was completely nude, and there was a tea towel, like one of your kitchen towels, tied very tightly around her neck. Alan immediately ran to her phone and dialed 911, and while on the call to dispatch, he was able to notice a few little other things that he had not taken in when he first walked in, which, of course, you wouldn't. You would be focused on Leona. He noted that the apartment was in a bit of a disarray, not completely ransacked, but definitely not in the usual order that Leona kept things. The phone was plugged in as was normal, but her answering machine was gone. Also gone was her television from the entertainment stand and the box of nail polishes. There was also a knife found near Leona's body, but did not appear to have been used as a weapon in her murder. When the police arrived only minutes later, they were able to see that Leona had clearly died from manual ligature strangulation from the towel. But there was a small amount of fresh blood around her anal cavity and some fecal matter on the floor beneath her, which indicated that her murder might have followed a sexual assault. Oddly, there was no sign of forced entry, so whoever had murdered the trusting Leona had known her. Now, all of this, of course, didn't look very good for Alan, being that he was the boyfriend, the last person to see her, the person to discover her only 6 hours after saying he had left, and that the answering machine was missing. Like, maybe there was something on the machine that he didn't want the police to hear. Police started to canvass the residents of the building around 3 a.m., and no one reported hearing or seeing anything out of the ordinary. They dusted the apartment for prints and looked through Leona's daytimer to see if maybe she had written anything about meeting someone other than Alan that night. The only thing they did see was the name Roger listed on February 9th, which was the day after she was found. And there was a set of fingerprints that didn't match either Leona or Alan on the entertainment unit where the TV had been, and on a coffee cup that was found stacked in the kitchen sink. Leona's body was transported to the medical examiner's office under the care of Dr. Urbanski, who was not only a pathologist for the chief medical officer, but also a professor of pathology at both the Foothills Hospital and the University of Calgary. And back in 1990, we didn't have as many murders and unattended deaths as we do today with our blossomed population. So he was able to start Leona's autopsy that very day. And you didn't have to wait for DNA results to come back then because it wasn't a thing. So cases of murder and sexual assault were circumstantial and based more on the totality of the evidence basis than hard, undisputable science in 1990, which is probably why there were more cases of wrongful convictions prior to like 2000 and onwards. So it's a darn good thing that the events of this story unfolded the way they did. Otherwise, I think this would be a story about a wrongful conviction of Alan Cannon.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dr. Urbanski wasn't able to determine the exact time of death, but was easily able to see that the T-tail that had been tied around her neck had been her cause of death. He could also determine that she had both vaginal and anal intercourse on the night that she had died, and that there were no defensive wounds, which may have indicated that the sex was consensual. He wasn't able to really narrow down the time of the vaginal intercourse that had taken place, but of the anal intercourse, he could narrow it down based on fairly fresh blood in the perianal region and superficial mucosal cracks in the rectum, put it as between 30 minutes to just at the time of death. He also wasn't able to come to any certainty that the strangulation had been in an attempt to basically subdue her in order to sexually assault her. The rectal area, or more accurately, the skin and tissue around the rectum, are rather fragile and subject to injury, and are actually a normal part of consensual anal intercourse, both the bleeding and the mucosal cracks. But they showed no signs of healing, so they were deemed to have been inflicted recently and not something that regularly occurred in her regular sexual activities, like there wasn't scar tissue from repeated past anal penetration. So it likely wasn't a sexual activity that she engaged in regularly. So it is still not really looking good for Alan here, but we do have these two fingerprints and this mysterious person named Roger. So at least for Alan, the good news is that there is a little wee bit of some other dude did it defense. But finding a guy named Roger in a city of almost 1 million people when no one she knew had heard her talk about a guy named Roger was kind of like looking for a needle in a, you know what I'm saying. But fortunately, fate had a little surprise in store for police when 2 days later, on February 11th, walked into a police station, one Patricia Proles, asking to speak to the detectives regarding Leona Jasmine. And standing nervously behind her was her 21-year-old son, Roger Jan Richer. Now, Roger had told his mom, well, he actually told his mom and his roommate Larry Miller the same story, that someone, some mysterious person that he didn't have a name for, had given him a debit card and a couple of credit cards with Leona's name on them. What the purpose of giving them to him was, who knows, but he heard her name on the radio as being dead. So he freaked out, he got rid of the cards. According to the court records, his mom told him to retrieve the cards and bring them with him to the station. Whether he did that or not, I don't know, but I do know where they went, which I'll get to. But hearing the name Roger, they were pretty interested in what he had to say about the night of February 8th into the 9th. Well, Roger told police that he knew Leona somewhat well. In fact, about 3 years ago, they had briefly dated. He knew that she had been depressed lately and had recently been hospitalized from an overdose of antidepressants. She never had any money, and she was very desperate. So as a good friend, he offered to take her answering machine and TV and sell them to give her the money for it the next day. So they arranged to meet on the 9th. So that would explain where her answering machine and TV went, kind of, but not how he also happened to have been given her debit card and credit cards that were stolen by someone else, apparently, that same night. And you know what else didn't make sense? Well, a few things, but that Alan never mentioned Leona's depression or that she was in regular contact with a guy named Roger. And the anal intercourse. So they asked him about that. Well, that was consensual, but she was very much alive when he left her that night, which was sometime between when Alan left and returned, and any number of other dudes could have killed her because, well, you know, she got around. Now, this was the first that the detectives were hearing that Leona was a woman that got around. And by got around, I mean slept with a bunch of guys. And Alan certainly never mentioned any concerns about her loyalty to him. What was also interesting about Roger's story about this consensual sex was what Roger didn't know was that they had already had a conversation with Alan about Leona's proclivities in the bedroom to try to determine if the sex had been consensual. And Alan was actually very upfront with the detectives. Leona felt very strongly that she wasn't interested in anal sex, like anything around that area. That was a no-touch zone. She didn't want to do it. She didn't even like him getting close to that area during sex at all. Now, does that automatically mean that because she didn't want to do it with Alan, she was maybe willing to do it with somebody else? Maybe. But as you ladies probably know, there's things that you like and things that you don't like. And in a lot of cases, there are probably things that you don't really enjoy the act of doing, but you do it anyways because, well, you just do. And if, you know, you want something in return. Well, anyways, anal sex isn't like one of those things. I mean, maybe it is for some women, but for most women, it's either a green light or a red light on that one. I don't know too many women that are willing to just do it just because. It's not like wearing a pair of high-heeled leather boots during sex because your guy likes it. I don't need to do a survey or research journals of medicines on this. In fact, the very fact that Alan knew of Leona's feelings about it were later admitted as testimony or evidence in court as to her inclination to have not consented to it, which is important for later in this horrible story. So with this suspicion of murder, Roger was detained and charged with Leona's murder, and the detectives got to work following up on Roger's story to either exonerate him or convict him. And it wasn't too hard of a story to follow up on because Roger had friends, but not help him bury the body type of friends. And one of those friends was his roommate, Larry Miller. Larry wasn't going to go down for nobody and told the police that Roger had left their apartment on the night of February 8th at some time between 7 and 8 p.m. and said that he was going to go see his girlfriend Sheila Stevenson and her friend Dion Deptuch. And he didn't return until the next day around 11 a.m. And that on February 10th, the day before he came to the police station, he had told Larry that he had been given the credit cards by some mysterious person and that he had gotten rid of them because he heard Leona's name mentioned on the radio and he was freaking out. He was in over his head in something. So he asked Larry to tell the police that if they asked that he had been home all night, which he also said to Larry's friend Kevin Mark, who happened to be there when Roger came into the apartment in a big panic. Sheila Stevenson was tracked down and she told officers that Roger had called her at work at 8 o'clock on the 8th, so only 2 hours after Alan had left Leona's apartment, that he had an answering machine for her to replace the one that he had sold to her before that didn't work. And when her friend Dion picked her up at work at 2 a.m., they went back to Sheila's apartment where Roger met them with the answering machine and carrying two boxes, one with a TV in it and the other a box of nail polish bottles, which Alan later identified as the type and brand that Leona had been selling. Roger had left their apartment around 8 that morning and headed to Abe's secondhand store where police discovered that he had sold the TV that he had been carrying the night before. Ironically, or very much not ironically, Leona's TV. Denise Butters and Heather Price, two other of Roger's friends, had received a visit from Roger on the morning of the 9th, where he gave them Leona's checkbook and credit cards to use to buy groceries, which they did, $150 worth of groceries from Safeway. But when Denise heard Leona's name on the radio, the same name on these credit cards that she had just used, she called Roger and told him they were going to go to the cops. They also wanted nothing to do with being tied to the fraudulent use of the credit cards and a murdered woman's name. I mean, I guess they were okay with using the stolen credit cards in general, but not if that person got murdered. Anyways, Roger pleaded with her to wait, and the next day he told his mom about the cards and Leona being on the radio, and that's when she convinced him he needed to come forward. Sheila was most displeased with Roger and his actions and strongly suspected that he hadn't been given these items but had stolen them and murdered Leona in the process. So she went back to the police and said that she was willing to call Roger in the remand center where he was being held, and they could record the conversations and she would try to get him to talk and hopefully confess.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, he didn't confess. Instead, he kind of incriminated himself by repeatedly telling her, "Look, I can't talk about that night. These phones are bugged," which they were. He was right. But saying, "I don't want to say something because someone might be listening," is sort of the equivalent of your 8-year-old breaking a vase and threatening your 6-year-old, "Please don't tell mom." You obviously know something or have something to confess, but you aren't ready to do it to the authorities. So with the evidence and witnesses that they had, they went to trial under Justice Hubert Oliver. And because it was murder with sexual assault, it was a charge of first-degree murder. Now, this is important to some appeal stuff that comes later, so we're just going to review the criteria for first-degree here in Canada again. A person commits first-degree murder if they planned and deliberated the murder. Planned means carefully thought out before it was carried out. Deliberated means considered and it was not impulsive. The victim is a police officer or prison employee. They committed the murder while committing or attempting to commit the hijacking of an aircraft, sexual assault, kidnapping, forcible confinement, hostage taking, criminal harassment, intimidation, or an offense in relation to a criminal organization or an offense that constitutes terrorist activities. Or they committed the murder for the benefit of, at the direction of, or in association with criminal organization. And at the time of the trial, the defense only argued that he had been in possession of the items for the intent to sell them for Leona's benefit and that any sex was consensual. So there was no sexual assault tied to the murder. But he was convicted of first degree, and that was in 1992, so he was 23 at the time. He would have been eligible for parole in 2015 at the age of 46. Where things get a bit more interesting is in his appeal that he filed in 1994. Now, regardless of his appeal, which, spoiler alert, was denied, I realize that he's either out, dead, or still incarcerated for it. But it's the details of his appeal that interested me, and most of the items the defense nitpicks about has to do with Justice Oliver's directions to the jury, but were things that were originally brought up at trial. Like, one of the issues was that the recorded calls were in violation of his invoked right to remain silent, but jail calls are pretty much always admissible, so he didn't get very far on that point. But the big and main issue was with the link between the sexual assault and the murder, which is required for that conviction of first degree. So in his appeal, they were no longer contesting the murder took place and that it was Roger that did it, but they were now changing the narrative on the sexual assault issue and had issues with the instructions that the jury was given with regards to it. As we know, when you murder someone during a sexual assault, it's first degree. But if that sex is consensual, and then the murder happens, it's not sexual assault, therefore cannot be first degree. And if someone else sexually assaults a person, and then you murder that person, it's still not first degree. It's connecting the sexual assault at the time and circumstances of the murder and or the sexual assault that happens simultaneously with murder. Say, raping someone while choking them, that is first degree. The trick is you have to link the two together. Raping someone and then like a week later murdering them in a fit of rage is likely not going to be enough to prove first degree. Now, what if the sexual assault happened after the person was dead. And that happens in a lot of cases of like serial killers. They have a bit of a proclivity to having sex with fresh and sometimes not so fresh corpses. Dr. Urbanski wasn't able to determine the exact timing of this anal-anal course, which could have happened just after Leona had passed away, if she was lucky, so that she didn't have to experience it. But herein lies the rub. Having sex with a corpse is not classified as sexual assault. It's offering an indignity to human remains, which is not necessarily sexual in nature. Dumping a body on the side of a road or dismemberment to conceal are forms of indignity to human remains. And suddenly on appeal, this is what the defense was alleging, and was upset that the Crown prosecutor had insinuated to the jury in his closing arguments, well, here, I'll just read what he said. "I want you to refer again to the photographs. I say not only are they helpful, they help tell the story. The woman is naked with his towel wrapped around her neck. That alone is evidence of sexual assault." And in his directions to the jury, Justice Oliver said, "The fact that she was strangled and was nude and her apartment was in disarray is a factor or factors which you can take into account in considering whether there was a sexual assault, whether it was forcible intercourse or not." And the defense was arguing that the sexual assault might have occurred after death and was therefore not first degree, and that the Crown and judge both told the jury essentially that the murder followed or was simultaneous with sexual assault. So their theory was that just because somebody was naked doesn't mean they were assaulted sexually, and just because the apartment was ransacked, that had nothing to do with determining sexual assault, both of which these last two the appeal court agreed with. But with the issue of the sexual assault coming after her death, he took a bit of exception to that. The appeal court wrote in their decision the following: "It has been suggested that where a murder is followed by an assault of a sexual nature upon the victim, the murder cannot be classified as first degree, even where the two acts, the murder and the assault, are intertwined within the parameters defined by the Supreme Court of Canada. This argument rests solely on the proposition that it is not possible to commit a sexual assault on a dead person. I have difficulty with this proposition that a murderer intent on silencing his victim or rendering her compliant for sexual activity should be able to argue that murder in these circumstances is not first-degree murder simply because his victim died by his hand before he could complete, or for that matter, begin the sexual assault. This entire debate on whether the precise moment of a victim's death preceded or followed the precise moment of sexual assault is highly artificial. This chicken and egg approach to which came first, the murder or the sexual assault, obscures the essence of the rationale for Parliament's decision to classify a murder committed during sexual assault as first degree. That rationale does not involve punishing a person for committing two separate crimes in a specific order, first sexual assault and then murder, but rather punishing a person because he has committed both in circumstances in which a temporal and causal connection exists between the two. What is important is not the order of commission, but the linkage between the two crimes. When the required linkage is found to exist, it is the two crimes, sexual assault and murder, committed together, regardless of the order, which represent the ultimate exploitation of the position of power over a victim and arguably mandate a conviction for first-degree murder. Dr. Urbanski also confirmed that death would have occurred within 1 or 2 minutes after strangulation began, giving the timing of the murder in relation to the sexual assault, and given the position and condition in which Jasmine's body was found, along with all the other evidence in this case, I cannot say in these circumstances it would be unreasonable for a jury to find the required nexus between the sexual assault and the murder by strangulation. Anyways, I found that all very interesting. I hope that you did too. Leslie Jasmine, who Leona's dad, passed away in 1997. It was only 6 years after her death. He was only 67. Darcy, her oldest son, passed away in 2006, 6 days before the 16th anniversary of her death at the age of only 31. I couldn't find any details about that, but I found the date to be very sad and a little bit ominous. June, Leona's mom, died in 2019 at 86 in Lethbridge. And that was the horrible rape and murder of Leona Jasmine. and I'm going to be back again next week. I think, like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be back again next week. I think things are starting to, well, life is still happening, but things are starting to come together, and I think I'm back on schedule with trying to get things written and recorded and all that good stuff. So I believe you will hear me back here next Monday with another case. As always, thank you so much for listening.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.